Welcome to another episode of 3.5 Cast. I'm your host, Mike. I've been DMing since 2000, and am currently past the halfway point of DMing through the Shackled City Adventure Path. With me tonight are Cablus.
Hello.
Fantasy Pen.
Hey, yo.
And Troacted.
That's right, I'm back. Jasmine, also known as Troacted.
And tonight we'll be picking up where we left off on the DMG Prestige class discussion. Last time we went over a bunch more. Tonight we're going to start where we left off, bashing on the duelist. After the last session, we started going off on the duelist and practically ended up having another episode right then and there, but we stopped. And I just want to start off by saying that it's really amusing that in the description of the duelist, they note that sometimes it's known as the Swashbuckler, which is amusing because later on they printed the base class Swashbuckler, which is basically a more functional version of the Duelist. And by all means, take it away, everybody.
Okay, so you said more functional version of the Duelist. You know, this isn't a podcast about the Swashbuckler, but since the Prestige class is also sometimes called the Swashbuckler, I might argue with that. But, you know, basically this class is really bad. You know, it's got, like, all these abilities that don't really do anything. And that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, the Duelist. It's definitely bad. I think there is a reason where if you go into Complete Warrior and read the Swashbuckler, it says, if you're using the Swashbuckler, don't use the Duelist.
They definitely have a lot of overlap.
Yeah, you know, I feel like you could remove the conditional there. Like, not if you're using the Swashbuckler, just, you know, generally, don't use the Duelist. basically, you know, it's this full base attack bonus prestige class, and it has a bunch of abilities that give, like, very small bonuses. Most of them function when using, like, you know, a weapon in one hand with no shield, and they give you, like, basically the equivalent of extra feats that are along the lines of dodge and mobility and stuff.
I mean, just saying, use a weapon in one hand with no shield, like, let's take the least effective melee form, i.e. sword and board, and then just remove the single defensive component from it. Sounds like a great plan, doesn't it?
What's impressive is you don't really add anything to it. You do basically nothing with the other hand. It's just a condition, so you can have a plus one bonus, a plus 1d6. It's really nothing for wasting a full arm.
Ooh, actually, I think I know what it is meant to represent. You get to turn your profile to the enemy, so you're sideways and you're a smaller target, which is why you add your intelligence bonus to your AC. I think that's what you're getting.
I mean, there are later feats such as Einhander, which worked to make this one-handed sword style better. And I mean, if you're a creative fighter, and when you are playing a martial character, you have to be. There are plenty of things you can figure out to do with a spare hand. But, you know, guys, I think instead of just going on about how bad this class is, I think it's time we actually showed why it's bad. Let's just do a class feature by class feature breakdown, okay?
Sure.
But one moment, just before you do that, I agree. But I think that what it's supposed to be representing is actually fencing, in like real life fencing, where you have one hand on your sword and one hand behind you. But it doesn't really translate well to D&D.
The problem is modern fencing is very much a sport rather than a realistic martial art.
I was going to say that because, honestly, fencing is not really combat today. You use fencing, okay, as a sport, but it's not like, let's say, boxing or Muay Thai, in which you can actually beat someone up with this. If you're using fencing and the other guy is just swinging the sword wildly, you're going to have a hard time.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's thematically supposed to be based more on like the Errol Flynn style of swashbuckling, where you're moving all over the place in cinematic ways. It just doesn't execute on it.
Anyways, canny defense. When not wearing armor or using a shield, that first one in particular is a big problem. The duelist adds 1 point of their intelligence bonus, if any, per duelist class level to her dexterity modifier to modify armor class while wielding a melee weapon. So basically, you are adding your intelligence to your dexterity for purposes of determining your AC.
But in increments.
Yes, and in theory, this probably isn't that bad of an idea, but in order to take full advantage of this, you need a way to get a +10 bonus to your intelligence. And if you've got an intelligence score that high, why are you not just playing a wizard?
For the record, when you said when not wearing armor, I laughed a good laugh.
Yeah, so basically, the effect of this class feature is it lowers your AC bonus, right? That's basically what it does. Because without this, you could be wearing light armor, you could be wearing, let's say, studded leather. That's a +3 bonus to AC. Okay, so you take your first level of duelist, you take off your studded leather armor, and congratulations, you've reduced your bonus from +3 all the way down to +1.
And not only that, but the fluff actually says, rather than wearing bulky armor, a duelist feels the best way to protect yourself is not to get hit at all. Well, then maybe you should be wearing some goddamn armor.
And here's the other thing that bothers me. The character on the very front of this, the person that is supposed to be our iconic duelist, they're wearing leather armor.
She's totally wearing leather armor. Although it doesn't look like it's very particularly protective leather armor, but still.
Well, leather armor in D&D is in no way correct to historical leather armor, so I think it's fine.
So at level 1, we have the intelligence to AC buff only 1 point at a time per level. And then at level 2, we have improved reaction +2, which is +2 to the initiative. And that's kind of like getting improved initiative as a bonus feat, except worse.
To be fair, it does become +4 at level 8.
Yeah, you take 8 levels to pay your 3 feats by getting improved initiative.
More reason why the duelist is terrible.
I don't think that an AC bonus in, or I'm sorry, an initiative bonus in and of itself is all that bad. And it does stack with improved initiative, which most builds like this will take anyways, and we all know that improved initiative is a good feat.
It's a really boring feat, though.
Okay, a lot of really practical things are boring, but that doesn't make them any less practical.
It is.
Honestly, that kind of sums up the whole class. Every level, you get a really boring, kind of underwhelming bonus feat. At level 1, it's like dodge-ish. Level 2, it's like half of improved initiative. Level 3, it's mobility. Again, even though we already had that feat. Level 4, lightning reflexes. Level 5, okay, a little damage bonus. I think there's a feat like that in some source book. Level 6 is basically just the jump skill. Level 7 is dodge again-ish, kind of combat reflexes, combat expertise.
But level 7, it's actually an amazing class feature. Elaborate parry. You
Yeah.
add, so if a duelist choose to fight defensively or use the total defense in melee combat, she gains an additional +1 dodge to AC for each level of the duelist she has. So if you take 10 levels of this class, it's Plus 14 AC on a full defense.
That one actually is admittedly pretty good. Not so much the full defense, but fighting defensively, you start at plus 3, so you're getting plus 13 from fighting defensively. That's kind of nifty, but it's the only good ability in the class.
Okay. Fixes. Let's start there. Canny defense. I think the biggest, just the fastest way to fix this. Don't have it be based off of your intelligence modifier. You just get a flat plus one to AC per level in this prestige class, and it replaces your armor bonus. What do y'all think?
I mean, you could.
Go ahead.
Sorry. You could have it use light armor and be plus one every two levels, so it's more flexible.
Honestly, I think you'd have it use light armor and still be plus one per level.
I suppose that could work.
What I actually did for my quick fix in the houseless document that I worked up a while back was I just said, okay, at every level of duelist after the first, you advance your class features of your base class, just like Legacy Champion or Uncanny Trickster. And there you go. Now it does a thing.
Well, that's cool. Looks like the... What's the name? The feat that merges Rogue and Swashbuckler. Daring Outlaw.
Yes, that one.
Sounds kind of like that.
Alright, so improved reaction. I personally think this one's fine by itself. Its only limit is that there are only 10 levels in this class.
Honestly, I think just the class features here are not very much to work with. If I were fixing this, if I were making a duelist class, I would start over from scratch, scrap the whole thing, or you know, like add some fighter bonus feats or whatever.
I agree. I would definitely start over. Just start from scratch, make my own class this time. A lot of the time, I would say most of the time, I work with what's there to make it work better, but not here.
Swashbuckler, the base class, has kind of a similar problem. It just has a bunch of class features that are not good, but because there's like hardly anything to work with, it's really hard to do a quick fix. You kind of have to reboot the whole.
I'd have to agree there.
Well, with that in mind, right. Shall we move on to the Dwarven Defender?
All right.
Oh, God.
Cabeless, you've been raring at the bit for this one.
Okay. So, the thing is, I really like the Dwarven Defender, but it's mostly because it's a dwarf-only prestige class. I really like dwarves, so anything exclusive to them is really cool for me. But the Dwarven Defender is kind of a hard sell. So, it's a dwarf-only prestige class based on the elite defenders of the dwarf society. It's like the top of the top. They don't work with other smaller soldiers. They work on specialized troops. They represent the ideals of a race that has to fight too many fronts to defend too many tunnels from too many invaders. They have a heavy focus on defensive combat, can survive well, have a d12 hit dice. And I believe the idea here is they are a physical embodiment of the Hold the Line, an unmoving fortress that can take on any challenge. But the actual execution is pretty bad. So, what do you guys think about it?
Well, you know, I'm looking at the description, and it's like it's got this actual thing here in the text that says, a line of dwarven defenders is a far better defense than a 10-foot-thick wall of stone, and much more dangerous. And I guess that is technically true. You know, you get a bunch of dwarven defenders in every 5-foot square, and sure, that'll probably be a better defense than a wall of stone. The trouble is, as a player character, you used to have exactly one dwarven defender, and probably in a lot of fights, you don't actually have a choke point to defend, and that makes it pretty difficult to make the class work in the way you want.
Building off of that, I have always felt the dwarven defender is one of those prestige classes that it's really been written for the DM. It's not particularly for the players. but rather it's a way for the DM to have an elite unit within their dwarven kingdoms that they can pull out and show off when the players eventually decide to go for full murder hobo.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. So let's talk about its class features. Well, your main class feature is a stance, no relation to Tome of Battle, of course, that gives minor bonuses to strength and constitution, a bit less than rage does for strength, but also boosts saves and armor class. You can't move in this stance, which throws statical movement through the window, and you can only use this stance a few times per day. So, one use on level 1, 2 on level 3, and it goes on like that.
So, one thing that I agree with is that it is better for the DM generally, but I would like to tell a short story about how a single Dwarven Defender, in my experience, was actually pretty good in this very specific setup. And I was the DM, and I was using the Dwarven Defender, so I'm kind of going against myself when I say that it's good for PCs in very, very specific circumstances, but the Dwarven Defender was basically by himself in this fight. It was in a moderately decent sized room, maybe like 50 feet by 50 feet. But he was supported by an invisible stalker, and there was a well magically hidden invisible teleportation circle in the center of the room. So he was on one end of the party, one end of the room. The party entered from the opposite side. Storyline being what it is, etc. in the campaign, you know, they talk first, fight ensues. Some of the party moves forward, some of the party, you know, tries range attacks, and he just goes into the defensive stance so he's not getting hit, and then the invisible enemy starts attacking from behind, so they're not sure what's going on. So one of the PCs rushes the Dwarven Defender and gets magically teleported away. So then the party has fewer members, they're getting attacked, they don't know where it's coming from, and this guy is just not moving and not getting hit because he's a Dwarven Defender and he can do that. So the ones, the ones that did get up to him around the teleportation circle don't have the support that they would normally have, so he can stand his own ground. So if you're a PC, I think that's the way to use this class effectively. You want to make it so that the enemies are taking you on in a way that they're not supposed to be taking you on, and that's not really how the class is advertised, which brings me back to why it is definitely better as an NPC, but it can be done if you have the right setup.
Yeah, the thing, honestly, it's a great story, but the thing is, as a player, you don't usually have the setup. Right. You can't really manipulate the field. You can say for sure you'll have a choke point. You have all these advantages.
Yeah, you really need the setup.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have a battlefield control mage, you can create a choke point wherever. Just
potentially
things like wall of force, solid fog, etc.
Yeah, I particularly like wall spells for that, because you can put curve the wall so that it hits both ends and then funnel the enemies through like the single 5-foot square where the Dwarven Defender is waiting.
The problem with that is that if you do it a bunch, it gets pretty boring pretty fast.
I can imagine. Also, you got to figure that sort of thing is going to stall out the combat forever, which it's like, it's cool that you're doing your thing, but it's been 3 hours and we're still in the first combat of the session. Maybe we can get to the story now.
That's true. And most of the time, these don't really work because let's say you're fighting in open field. In an open field, you can't make a choke point.
What's that dwarf doing in the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's his fault.
He had it coming.
Never should have come out of those tunnels. I kind of like the concept of a Dwarven Defender. And I feel like they just kind of flubbed the execution, actually, kind of in a kind of embarrassing way. Like, why did they give him trap sense? Like, what even is that about? Is that part of the archetype? Is that part of the fantasy of the Dwarven Defender where you're, standing stalwart in one place, but also if you accidentally trip or trap, oops, right back,
Personally,
right
I
back in
think
front of
it's because I think it was A to give them just more AC, but also because most of the common enemies for dwarves are known for traps.
guess that kind of makes sense.
And well, they live in tunnels, they live underground. They are, you could say, a specialized class, like the Dwarven Defender is more used to fighting booby traps, to finding enemies, finding ambushes and things like that, you know?
Cobalt.
Kobolds. Oh, and you do get a bit of damage reduction, but level six.
You know what I'd really like to would like to have seen on this class would be fast healing. Imagine if you got fast healing while you're in defensive stance, you can just stand there all day, and as long as you keep blocking those attacks, you'll just heal up the damage, and then it's like they didn't even touch you. That would be a nice feature for this
Yeah,
class.
that'll be neat.
That would be pretty sweet. I think that would actually make it worth taking without any other changes. Like that alone would be like, wow, this is a powerful
Well,
class for tanking.
I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far because there's still the daily limit if it's only in your defensive stance. But still, it feels like it would really help the fantasy. Of course, they did eventually sort of, air quotes, remake this class in Tome of Battle. They made, like the one that like creates the difficult terrain around you by like physically changing the ground, and then you use the stone dragon as a stance
Oh
missile.
yeah, the Deep Warden.
Those two are actually quite compatible as well. It's rather interesting.
Yeah, and that's a much better execution of the same
Yeah, Deep
fantasy,
Stone
isn't
Sentinel, sorry.
One thing I wanted to add on to what you were saying earlier about the damage reduction. It actually does get a good amount of damage reduction because it's the slash hyphen type, so it's always going to work. You can't bypass it with, magic weapons or adamantine or whatever. So, I mean,
Yeah.
damage reduction 6, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but damage reduction 6 at like level 17 or whatever, that's not so good.
Yeah,
That's
that's
true. It
not
does
good.
come in very late.
I mean, DR6 at level 3, like ECL 3, then we're talking. But level 17, that's.
And to compare that, I mean, what's the end game barbarian where they get two or something pathetic like that? And that's at level like 20-ish. So, another
The
Wizards of the Coast
Wizards of the
moment where they
Coast
just
barbarians
didn't get it.
barbarian gets about four or five.
The barbarian gets 5 DR at the end of its progression. Wizards of the Coast was very, very, very sparse with giving damage reduction to player characters for just whatever reason.
Well, I'll be honest. To fix this class, I thought of a few things, like first, let it move at low speeds, like half normal or a third of normal when in the stance. Even just 5 feet steps are fine. It's like when you're completely rooted to the ground, you can't really fight in D&D. It doesn't work like that.
To be
And
fair,
not just
at
in.
what, level 8? Yeah, 8, you get mobile defense, and then at that point you can move a 5 foot step.
But you feel like it should be a basic competency if you're forming a shield wall of a bunch of dwarves that you can step into the space that somebody else, if somebody else falls,
Yes.
right? I mean, you gotta fake.
Well, yeah, but honestly, you get flanked. You get ignored, you get made fun from afar, people shoot you, people go around, kill your mage. You're really not helping most of the time when you don't move.
You know what? I think this class actually makes a lot more sense for Dwergar than for normal dwarves, because Dwergar can enlarge themselves up to, large size, and then they get to increase their reach. They can use reach weapons and have like a reach of 20 feet, and then they can actually make pretty good use of the defensive stance, because who needs to move when you can hit the whole battlefield from where you're already standing?
Yeah,
That is
that
true.
makes sense.
Okay, should we move on to Eldritch Knight?
Sure.
Oh, just one more thing. I'd like to say this, the damage reduction thing. Maybe if you really wanted to make an actual Dwarven defender, someone that can stand up and stay in defending a position for a long, long time, he should have a little more. I believe maybe, let's say, you get DR2 at level 1. You get plus 2 every 2 levels. You end the class with 10 DR. It's amazing. Holy, holy. I mean, 10 DR, but you invested 10 levels in Dwarven Defender.
Sure, I guess. I mean, DR is way more effective at low levels when enemies are doing less damage. DR10 at level 5 is really something. DR10 at level 17 is maybe not quite as much of this.
Yeah, maybe. It seems
For
just a
DR
lot.
to be worth it, it generally needs to be roughly equal to your level or higher. Moving on to the Eldritch Knight now, I believe.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yep.
The Eldritch Knight is quite possibly the first true example of what is widely called the Gish archetype on the online communities. It blends magic and martial skill together, creating an arcane warrior who is greater than the sum of its parts. It grants you a full BAB progression and 9/10 spellcasting level. At first level, instead of increasing your caster stats, it will give you a fighter bonus feat. And really, that's about as close to, that is about as positive as I can get about this class. Despite having a fighter base, the class only has a D6 hit die. It has a poor will save, even though it's ostensibly a magic-using class. I honestly don't like it. I've never used it, and I have no plans to. It has no class features, and despite having the 9/10 spellcasting progression, it just There's, it does not natively do anything on its own to blend your sword and your sorcery together. You will often feel, okay, right now I'm a mage, but I've also got a few fighter skills to back this up. It suffers from the same problem that most of these prestige classes in the DMG have. It was an early execution of a concept, and the creators were, for whatever reason, afraid to really push the envelope.
So I actually don't think it was the first Gish Prestige class, because it wasn't in the original 3.0 Dungeon Master's Guide. It was added to the 3.51, if I'm remembering correctly. So then we actually had a couple that came before it, like in Tome and Blood, for example. We had both the Bladesinger and the Spellsword. In particular, I think the Spellsword is a really good example of the fantasy that Eldritch Knight is trying to be, and it's actually a lot better, even though it's still not that great. So I feel like they kind of like downgraded. Maybe they're just trying to be the simplest possible execution for their core rulebook, but I don't know.
It does seem like they went for simplicity, but I find it strange that you need to be able to cast third level arcane spells, and you must be proficient with all martial weapons. That means at least 5 levels of wizard and 1 level of fighter.
Yes.
Well, to be honest, you're basically just trading like 2 levels for bigger base bonus attack. Bigger base attack bonus.
Yeah, the first time I saw this prestige class, I was kind of a newer player. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, this class just advances your spell casting. Does it have any class features? No? Why would I take this class? And then I realized, oh, it has a base attack bonus, so I get like plus one to hit, but I lose a level of spells. Wow, that's terrible.
I remember the first time I saw this prestige class, I went, oh, sweet, finally something that would let me play a wizard and a fighter at the same time. And then I actually looked at it. Wait, this is just spellcasting. Where are the class features? Where is doing stuff? What's going on here? You know what? I'm just going to pick up Duskblade. That's going to be my thing.
So the paradigm that this really shows in third edition design, especially early in the life cycle of third edition design, was that they seriously overvalued the base attack bonus. They thought it was way more important than it actually turned out to be. And Eldritch Knight is just sort of one of the living embodiments of this concept. They're like, oh well, we could give you class features, but look, you've got improved base attack bonus. That's all you really need. Here you go, enjoy. Now you're a fighter. But in practice, it's just plus one to hit, you know?
Yeah, and most
If
of the
they.
time is you don't really get to use the iterative attacks because when you're casting a spell, you're not doing anything else in the turn.
I mean, it is also admittedly a good example of the sort of the paradigm of mostly full casting, but like, you know, skip one level as a means of
Yes.
balancing a prestige class. So, in that sense, you know, it has the advantage over Arcane Archer, for example, because, you know, that's a spell casty fighty class, but it doesn't advance spell casting at all. And it gives some interesting class features. This one, okay, we'll advance spell casting, but we're not going to give you any class features. And it's like, seriously, can't I just have both? But you can tell they were testing out different sort of styles for this kind of character.
I just think it's a boring class.
Oh, it's super boring.
Most definitely. It's not even boring, but practical. It's just boring.
It's horribly boring. I do not like the class.
I mean, when you don't even separate between the bonus spell casting levels and the bonus feats in the goddamn class table.
Yeah, and the class table has just got the one column for them both because whatever. Yeah, so I mean, you know, in theory, like, it's not that bad because, you know, you're still a full spell caster. You're losing one level of spell casting, but full spell casters are powerful enough that you've got a little bit to give. The main problem I have with it is just it feels like a broken promise because you want to be this person who can swing a spell, swing a sword, and cast spells. And you end up being the person who, like, can cast spells a little worse and then can't actually swing a sword because, you know, you can't wear heavy armor. It'll mess up your spell casting. You have no way to cast. And by the time you actually can swing a sword decently, your spells are so powerful that it's like, wow, I could be doing 1d8 plus 4 damage. No, I think I'll just cast the fireball that deals 8d6 damage. That seems better.
Of course, Wizards of the Coast's hatred for martial characters is a different topic entirely.
Not so much hatred as I didn't know how to balance them at all. At least not at this point in the edition's lifespan.
Give them shit to do. That was all you needed. Give them shit to do.
Well, it seems like, you know, they thought that that was the most powerful thing, just probably because of previous editions had more powerful, like just core martial stuff. But yeah, that didn't go over well here.
I mean, you're getting almost full progressing spell casting. What else would you need?
Some actual class features?
Yeah, class features would be
Yeah,
nice.
that's a problem.
You know, at least the ability to cast an armor. That'd be, you know, a good thing.
I would like my sword swinging to mean something, because, you know, I'm a weird person who likes to play melee marshals.
I think this would have been a great class to have tested the waters with spells going off during a melee attack, like they did with Duskblade eventually. It would have been interesting if they had just had like
Yes.
a prototype Duskblade here, but no, they messed it up.
The thing is, it's
Well,
not
they
even
have
eventually
a
because.
prototype Duskblade. It's called the Spell Sword.
Yes, and the spell sword also came out before the Eldritch Knight, so that they had the technology already. They just were like, no, you know what? Let's make it more boring.
Yeah, they really dropped the bomb then.
You know what? I feel like that's something that we actually need to look up.
What's that?
The 3.0 DMG. Anybody
Oh,
got one?
I have it. I have it here actually. It's definitely not in there.
Just give it a quick look. Let's
Yeah, it
see
goes
what they do offer instead.
there
It
are
goes
multiple classes, yeah.
Blackguard to Dwarven Defender to Lore Master to Shadow Dancer. No Eldritch Knight.
Oh, good lord. Yeah, they really have no excuse for this one.
Yeah, okay. Also, I'd like to point out there's a reason everyone gets a variation of Armored Mage.
It's important.
Yeah, it's a big part of the archetype, and that is something that they didn't realize until much later in the cycle.
Honestly, I felt like it's something that they knew was part of the fantasy, but they thought they couldn't allow it because it was too powerful. All right, should we move on to the Hierophant?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
The Arcane Archmage.
Yes, we talked about the Archmage a couple podcasts ago.
Divine.
Hierophant is, yeah, it's the same thing. It's literally the same mechanic. There's slightly different abilities, and it doesn't advance casting the same way. But honestly, pretty much anything you can say about the Archmage, you can pretty much say about the Hierophant.
I love this ability name, Blast Infidel. Just beautiful, beautiful imagery.
You know, I feel like that would be a good superhero name. Yes, never fear, Blast Infidel is here.
Oh, gosh. I would like to note the big difference, other than the fact that it's divine instead of arcane versus the Archmage. Is that this one doesn't advance your previous class's spell casting ability.
Well, neither did the Archmage.
The Archmage does.
The Archmage does.
I think I'm not sure, but I think the reason for
Yes, the
this
Archmage
was,
did. Okay.
yeah, I think the reason for this was because I wasn't in second edition, like there was a lower level cap for divine casters. Like they couldn't advance their casting as far as arcane casters. And so Hierophant is like, after you've hit your casting cap, you can take this. And so it's like
It,
replicating that second edition experience. I
I
feel like I
think
heard that at some point, but I'm not sure.
I think it might be because the Hierophant doesn't take away your spell slots, it seems.
Oh yeah, I
Yeah, but
guess.
it gets Sorry.
Go
It
ahead.
doesn't take it does not take away your spell slots, so you get to keep
Yeah, but you get less spell slots because you have less caster levels.
Yes, which is why they're not taking them away from you with the abilities, apparently. That's kind of the point I was getting at.
To be fair, I do actually like some of these special abilities, like what is it, the one that lets you give your class features to party members. So like you're a druid, and then you can just give your wild shape to everybody else. That's pretty neat, especially if you're high enough level that you're like, oh, I've already got 19th level spells. I could get it, but 9th level spells. I could get additional spell slot, or I give all my party members the ability to wild shape, or is it one of the party members? I don't know.
It's power of nature that you're referring to. It's
Yes.
available only to Hierophants with druid levels, but yeah, that's pretty neat.
You can give them one or all of your wild shape uses, which is actually pretty interesting.
It still consumes yours.
Yes,
That's good.
but
That's cool.
Another ability that's worth mentioning, not because it's useful, but because it's really stupid to take, is spell power, which increases the effective caster level by one. And since you don't gain a caster level in the class natively, you're basically taking a level in Hierophant to not get anything. You're basically just
For
like, why
free.
didn't you just take
It gives
another
you
level in
nothing.
cleric? You get nothing that you would have got from taking your base class.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of baffling. I gotta admit, that's true.
Do we have anything else to say about the Hierophant?
No, I'm tapped out. It's
I
basically
believe
very
not.
similar to the.
Yeah, we're good. We can move on
Oh, it can
to.
get a free metamagic feat.
Free
It
is a
can get
strong
free
word.
metamagics, I
You have
suppose.
to take a level of Hierophant.
Yes, that is true.
That's the cost.
All right. Horizon Walker. Did anybody do any study on this one?
Well, a better question. Has anyone ever seen one of these in a game?
Nope.
Nope.
So I considered my very first D&D character, I considered having my bard become a horizon walker. And then I looked at all the other bard prestige classes and I was like, oh, hell no. But I saw the picture and I thought, wow, that's a pretty cool picture. What does this class do? Knowledge geography? I have that skill. And then of course the next time I sort of did a double take and I was like, wait, that picture is the Hierophant, not the Horizon Walker. Boy, this Horizon Walker picture is really boring.
That's so funny because I had the exact same experience, actually.
It's just really bad art placement. Like this offends me personally. I went to school for learning how to do this shit. I am act by this terrible placement.
But yeah, just to describe the picture of the Horizon Walker a little, it looks like this like snobby archer with the arrow drawn but pointed at the ground for some reason, so it's not even like the Horizon Walker is
Yeah,
ready for battle or anything. She's like ready to kill an ant that she's not looking at, and it kind of looks like she's just moseying
it's knocking
around
the arrow
nonchalantly
and
with no
preparing
goal
to
in mind
draw.
whatsoever.
Contrast that with the Hierophant, which is this dude in heavy armor. It looks like he's missing a limb because arms don't bend that way, Phil. And he's just got a lightning charged spear staff glaive thing.
And his hair and cape are like flowing through the wind, or possibly the power of that lightning glaive.
Am I the only one who saw him as like riding on these floating stones through the
Well, yeah, I thought that he was on some other plane where like the ground is just made up of floating rocks, and he just happened to have landed on these rocks there. Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
I always thought he was standing on a castle wall getting ready to smite somebody's army.
I mean, that makes more sense, but I kind of like my version better.
I think we've just invented a much more interesting version of the Stormcaster.
I think the Stormcast is pretty interesting. Actually, the Horizon Walker is kind of interesting too. Let's talk about what it actually does, because it has some nifty abilities. Basically, the Horizon Walker is based around, oh, I've been everywhere, so I know all the places, and I can fight in all different kinds of terrain. And you basically get to pick a new favored terrain at each level, and you get special bonuses depending on what sort of terrain it is. So, for example, if you pick desert terrain, then you could walk through the desert without getting dehydrated as easily, you're immune to fatigue, etc.
Yeah, for a specific campaign, like a highly planner-based campaign where you're going to be traveling to these places and you have a feeling for where those places are going to be, then I think the Horizon Walker does have a place in it. But if you don't talk to the DM in advance, then you're kind of just going to be wasting your levels, because if you don't pick the right terrain mastery or the right planar terrain mastery, then you're not gonna be using your abilities, and that's kind of aggravating.
I have to disagree actually, because the key thing about these terrain masteries is that you learn these abilities from traveling in those terrains, but they still function in any type of terrain. So you're immune to fatigue wherever you are, not just in the desert, and you get a plus one bonus on desert creatures, even if they're, as long as they have an environment. Like, let's say you're fighting a blue dragon, but you're at like the top of a mountain. Well, it still has desert as its environment, so you still get the bonus. And then the
That's.
planar terrain masteries, admittedly the aligned planar one only works on aligned planes, but the ability that you really want out of this class, the best ability in the entire class, is the shifting planar mastery. And let's use Dimension Door every 1d4 rounds. And it's fantastic. Dimension Door is an amazing spell, and you can basically use it at will. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was gonna mention shifting because most abilities are basically plus one insight bonus on attack and damage rolls against a very specific kind of enemy. But shifting, it's amazing.
It's incredible.
I agree that one is good, but the other ones that have, resistances to elements or like a plus one, they're subpar in comparison, unless, like what I was getting at before, you know in advance that you're going to be dealing with that a lot. Like if you were to take fiery planar and then go to the fire plane, like, oh look, I have 20 fire resistance. I'm gonna.
I agree,
It's got
but
the same problem as the Ranger, which it seems to have been designed as a specifically four is the ranger almost.
I disagree again. I think these abilities are reasonably universal. Let's take an example. Let's say I'm building a Horizon Walker. Probably my terrain masteries, I'm going to take underground, get dark vision. That's good in a lot of different places. You know, you can be in the dark. The desert makes you immune to fatigue, which doesn't always come up, but it's a really great combo with certain things, namely like the Dragonborn, where you can fly, but it fatigues you if you do it for too long. So then you can just fly forever because you never get fatigued. And then, you know, then you'll just pick up some skill bonuses. But then once you get to the Planar Masteries, shifting is fantastic at level 6. And then right after that, you can take Cavernous. That'll give you Tremor Sense, which is a great ability. You know, that's perception. And then Fire and Cold Resistance. Those are the two most common energy types. So the Cold and Fire planes, those are really good too. The only ones that I don't like so much are the Weightless Planar Mastery, which like literally just works on the Astral Plane and the Elemental Plane of Air. That one seems pretty bad. And you know, some of the regular terrain masteries can get a little bit boring because it's
Yeah,
plus
I
four to
agree,
ACL.
but I just like to point something out. Entering this class is really easy.
It's super
You
easy.
can enter it by you can it, you only need knowledge geography. You can enter it by level 6, and you only need 1 feat endurance. So
Which rangers get as a
actually you don't
bonus?
ha yeah, you don't have to know so much about your campaign, because if you're starting below level 6, level 6 is in level 6 you get a feat. You can pick endurance. Knowledge geography is not so hard to pump. Most, at least a couple classes have it. And I think what I'm trying to say is that it's not so specific. You can tailor it to work in most campaigns.
Yeah, Horizon Walker is often mentioned on the forums as one of the best prestige classes in core for non-spellcasters. And I think I agree with that designation, with the caveat that it really only gets good if your game is going to higher levels. And that's because you don't get Planar Terrain Mastery until level 6. And that's where the really good stuff is. If you can get that Shifting Terrain Mastery, then boy, it feels real good. That is a great ability. But if your game is going to end at like level 8 or 9, then it gets less exciting because then you're just getting your plus 4 bonus a spot and some dark vision, and that's not quite as interesting.
One thing that I wonder is how common is knowledge geography among the base classes? Because it is easy to get into this class if that's a core class, but it does take a little while longer if that's not one of your core skills.
Well, you have it as ranger, as wizard, I believe druid,
Yes.
and the others. Let me.
All right,
It's a
knowledge
bard.
geography.
Okay.
Bard, ranger, wizard, not druid.
Not
Not
druid.
druid. Oh.
Druid as nature instead. So those are the three core classes that can do it. But also it's, you know, not too hard to get. There's a bunch of feats that'll let you add knowledge skills to your class skill list. Oh, I guess clerics can also get it if they have the right domain, I think. Knowledge domain.
Yeah, and if you're a cloistered cleric, you can pick domain. Yeah, pick it too.
Yes, but that's not core.
Yeah.
Well, the knowledge domain is a core domain, so.
Yes, but I was referring specifically to the cloistered cleric.
What I'm trying to say is that you have a couple options.
Anyway, this is pretty popular for optimizing core melee characters. Personally, I actually prefer the Dragon Disciple for that because I like the strength bonuses and like the wings. And you know, you get some decent payoffs a little sooner. Plus you get just a little bit of spell casting to mix it in. But the Horizon Walker is a, you know, pretty decent choice if you're a core only sort of melee character. Once you start getting outside of core, then you can start having access to prestige classes that give more exciting abilities at lower levels. And it's like, oh, you don't have to wait so long for the payoff. And then I think Horizon Walker looks a little worse in comparison.
Well, yeah, most things that were released much later in the 3.5 cycle are definitely better.
That just comes with
Yep.
the experience of the edition being out longer, so. Well, what do you guys think? Wrap it up here?
Sure,
Sure.
sure.
All right, and that is it for now. I'm sure we'll continue the DMG Prestige classes later. And once again, I'm your host, Mike, and with me tonight has been Cabeless.
Thanks, man.
Fantasy Pen.
Good night, all.
And Troacted.
Signing off.
Until next time.